Welcome to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine's podcast series. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. In this episode, Brett Jones reads his story, Not My First Rodeo, from our March-April 2022 issue. Brett Jones is an author, filmmaker, and professor and program coordinator of acting for digital arts at Wichita State University. His story features a different sort of PI, not one based in an urban setting, but in rural Oklahoma. This is familiar territory for Brett Jones, who is raised on a farm in Oklahoma where he is a member of the Muscogee Nation. Not My First Rodeo is his first story for AHMM.
So what happens when it's a slow time of the year and your on-again, off-again girlfriend is in the Oklahoma Bureau of Investigation and you just happen to have your own detective agency is you end up getting nutty gigs thrown your way in her effort as a good free will Baptist of doing her Christianly duty. And like anyone, you, meaning me, try to demonstrate your appreciation by taking on said nutty gig. That's why, at midnight on a Friday night, I sat in my truck with my legs hanging out of the window in a patch of alfalfa in some back woody area of Garvin County. My phone pinged at me. I punched my thumb on the alert for the text message. Everything okay? Any sign of anything yet? Natalyn. I'd told her 1,000 times she didn't need to sign or text, as I knew she was the sender because all cell phones were designed to do that. She explained, for the millionth time, that she found it to be more polite that way. I texted back, "Ugh," as my way of expressing my feelings on the matter. I didn't sign it either out of spite. Lifting my head from the seat, I spun a quick 360 around the field, but didn't see anything except for some far-off light on the top of an oil rig. The roughnecks working the graveyard were having a better time of it than me. I laid back down in the seat, cursing the day I decided to answer the altar call at a revival last summer. Here I was, wanting to clear my conscience and my slate, but I ended up instead with an OSBI agent, Madeline Carmichael, assigned to me as my accountability partner. I've never been so accountable in all my life, and that's putting it mildly. The phone rang. I looked at the screen, thinking I was about to have to account. Nope, the client. Oh, for crying out loud, I mumbled as I hit the answer button. "Before you ask, not a thing," I said before he could put two words together. "Mr. Gibson, I've had nearly 50 bales of alfalfa cut open and strewn through two of my hay meadows," he said. "I know that, sir," I said, trying to steer the convo down another less traveled path. "I'm telling you, we need to figure out the why on this." He sputtered something unintelligible, which I marked as one of his better qualities. "Rebaling all the time is not helping my operation out any." "I know that too, Mr. Burford. Rebaling causes the leaves to come off, and that's where all the protein is, and the dairymen that I sell to aren't going to want to pay full price, and this is turning out to be a rough year financially for me," he moaned. "This I know as well, sir," I said without any hint of sarcasm. I felt like it, sure, but I sympathized with a man trying to eke out a living from the land. "Have you thought any more about why anybody would be doing something like this?" "It's sheer vandalism. It's probably a couple of high schoolers with nothing better to do," he shot back. 50 bales? I asked, not buying the theory. "That's a lot of boredom for a teenager. And mind you, this takes some effort, as the bales in question were 4 feet by 4 feet by 8 feet and weigh nearly a ton. They're held together by 6 thick pieces of twine. This kind of vandalism would take sharp knives and more than one person to make short order of the work involved." "You still there, Mr. Gibson?" he asked. "I'm having a hard time buying it, that's all." He chose to ignore me. "Nothing then?" "Not a thing." "You call me if anything, I mean anything, happens," he ordered. I mock saluted, said I would, and rang off. And then proceeded to type out a tacky text to Natalyn with furious thumbs flying across the screen. Feeling somewhat better, I deleted it. I didn't dare pick a fight with my accountability partner. A lot of folks don't know that the Oklahoma Department of Agriculture has an investigative services branch that deals with ag-related crime. Not reported on much in the media, ag crime in the state totals in the millions of dollars relating to arson and all kinds of theft, timber, animal, chemical, and equipment. Being summer, the unit kept themselves busy as farmers were hard at it with harvest time, which brought out the thugs who, as Mr. Burford posited, didn't have anything better to do. Able to contract my particular type of service, the D of A threw me a bone from time to time. It saved them dough and it paid my electric bill. Needless to say, in summer, I like the AC set to 74. Hearing something off in the distance, I popped my head up above the dash to scope out the field again. I heard whistling in the air. The human kind, too. Starting my truck, I eased it into drive. Back toward the northeast, I thought, as I sped quietly along Burford's hay meadow. I stopped and stuck my head out of the window. I heard more than whistling this time. A yelp. Someone hollering something unintelligible, and yips came from over near the creek on the east side of the alfalfa field. With my lights off, I eased up to a clump of trees. I killed the engine and got out. I saw a couple of lights bouncing off down the creek bed. Someone shouted, "There he is, Bo! There he is! Get him, boy! Go on, get him!" Couldn't be. In this day and age? I went to see for myself. I stayed on the edge of the creek as I trotted into the darkness toward the shouts and carrying on. The noises got louder the further north along the creek I went. "There he is!" "No, over there!" a voice yelled. "Bo! Get him up that tree, boy!" Yep, I'd been right. I just couldn't believe it. I didn't know anyone around here did this anymore. I slid behind a big oak about 50 yards away from the bobbing lights. I could make out a couple of guys my dad's age holding rifles and shining their flashlights up above them. I'd never gone in my life, but when I was growing up, I heard all about the famous coon hunts from the old-timers who lived near our family farm. Another reason the D of A liked to hire me. I understood agriculture. I grew up on a farm and ranch just south of where I stood, about 40 miles or so. Men from a couple of generations back would hunt for raccoons as a form of entertainment. Why? No idea. But I didn't grow up in their era, so who am I to judge? I tipped my imaginary hat to them as I hopped along back to my pickup. That's when I heard a vehicle spin out back to the west of me. "Aw, crap," I said as I hightailed it out of there. I hopped in the front seat, kicked the engine to life, and whipped back around onto the hayfield quicker than Dallas, but my curiosity with the coon hunters kept my attention elsewhere. Zipping down the dirt road on the west side of the meadow was a truck obviously rushing away for some reason. I drove around the field to find out why. 7 more bales of Burfords had been cut wide open and the hay strewn all over creation. "You blew it, Vince," Natalyn said as she reached across me to get the pepper. "I thought you'd wrap it up in a couple of days." She used the pepper and then handed it to me, expecting that I would put it back where she found it. I did. We sat there side by side like a couple of high school sweethearts in a dingy dive I like called Abe's. Known for greasy eggs with equally greasy sausage patties, I haunted the place on a regular basis. The night before didn't end well, so I nurtured the hope that Natalyn might just give me a touch of sympathy and a truck full of advice. Instead, I got my usual chewing. "It was a simple stakeout job, Vince," she droned. "I wanted to throw you a gig and help you out with your business, which obviously isn't doing too well." She added this with dramatic flair by finishing off her biscuits and gravy with one final forkful. "Business is fine, Nat," I said, somewhat offended. "I've told you I don't like being called Nat. And I've reported that my biz is fine. Now pass me the hot sauce and put some coffee in your pie hole," I said, hoping for a chuckle. I got a punch on the arm instead. She crunched on some bacon with renewed vigor. "The sheriff down there wasn't impressed and isn't wanting you to spend any more time down there," she whispered, as if I cared if Abe heard or not. He knows Natalyn. "I need to know what's been going on down there besides the vandalized hay bales," I told her. "And this is the second time I'm asking for the hot sauce." This time she gave it to me. "He won't want to cough up, I'm sure," I added. "But see if you can make it happen. What type of criminal activity have they been dealing with down there for the past couple of weeks?" She frowned at me, which I found lovely. "How would you like me to do that?" she asked. "Just do you." couple of hours later at my office in Oklahoma City, I did a cursory visit to the Garvin County Sheriff's Office website. Nothing tantalizing caught my attention, and I figured most of the online info would be put out for public image purposes. The nittier, grittier warrants and arrests would be a matter of public record eventually. Young, dumb, and foolish, explained vandalism, as many answering to that description have it in them to wreak a bit of havoc. But over several nights, targeting the same farmer? That took planning and some inkling of intelligence. If I hadn't been curious about the coon hunters, I might have gotten a look at who was responsible. As my dad likes to say, if ifs and buts were candy and nuts. He always leaves the last part hanging, assuming that those in hearing distance know the rest of it. Noon came and went without a call from Natalie, but I was smart enough to not bug her. There'd be one more reason for me to answer the altar call come Sunday. At this rate, I tilt a spiritual pinball machine. Antsy, I dug for the keys to my pickup. I set off back down south toward where Burford called home, Lindsay. Small, oil, gas, ag, and Friday night football, the town boasted a Sonic, Pizza Hut, and two insurance salesmen. I grew up in a place just like it further south. The people were real, as they didn't know any other way to be. The cafes all served the same kind of food, with boatloads of extra coffee and a darling or a honey from the waitresses. For business reasons, I officed out of OKC, but my heart belonged in places like this small town where the dust in the air is red, and so are the necks. When I hit I-35 going through Norman, my phone pinged. Hoping not to raise the stats on crashing from looking on at one's cell phone, I swiped and quickly scanned a text from Natalie. Petty larceny, vandalism, a few speeders, and drunk drivers galore dominated the incarcerations. I scrolled further down with my thumb. Disappointed, I speed dialed. "This isn't helping me, Nat," I whined. "And hello to you too," she said. "And don't call me Nat. A gnat is a small buzzing bug that drives you crazy." I resisted the urge. I didn't want to die. "Any weed growers down there getting into any kind of trouble?" I asked. "Most can go legit now, Vince, with the new medical marijuana laws." "It's too expensive for most of them," I countered. "What are you fishing for?" she inquired. "I have no idea." "It is just a few vandalized hay bales, after all." I frowned, pulled the phone in front of my face, and snarled. "Then tell me, pray tell, why we were having this conversation, Nat." "Because I thought I would throw you a bone, since the private investigations biz stinks these days, and I like to date a man who has an income, steady or otherwise," she barked.
"You're just lucky I don't have a temper," I snapped back.
"What else is going on in Garvin County that can't be found on a website or passed along to little old me?"
"I'm hanging up the phone now, Vince," she said. "How about I fix us some fried chicken and fries tonight?"
That got the wheels turning. Natalie knew my kryptonite amounted to home cooking, which she only did for desperate situations. "What's the meth trade like these days in Garvin County?" I asked, feeling sly. Pause, pause from the other end.
"They had a bad time of it last year," she admitted.
Her tone had iced from 2 seconds earlier. "Who is about to get busted down there?" Silence. "Natalie," I said, "who's moving the product down there?"
"Vince, the gig is vandalized hay bales, and that's what you need to stay focused on," she warned. "I shouldn't even be having this conversation with you right now."
"Then don't," I hung up. Burford didn't offer much encouragement either, as he met me outside his house at my pickup door before I could get out of it. When agitated, he liked to add an annoying growl to his voice. I found it humorous, but didn't tell him that.
"All you do, Gibson, was just sit there and watch a few of my hay bales," he said, pitching the growl deeper.
"And anyway, as I understand it, this is just something to get you a couple of bucks and appease your girlfriend."
I opened my mouth with enough invective to get me into more trouble than it was worth already at this point. I shut my yapper. He smiled, knowing full well that he could bully me and get away with it. Visions of me spinning a 180 spewing gravel on his manure-crusted boots came to mind, but I knew my truck didn't have it in her to spit more than a rock or two. "How long have you been at this cutting anyway?" I asked.
"What's it to you, Gibson?" he shot back.
"If you haven't noticed, I'm giving you the brush off.
And I'm asking a question, I said none too kindly. Just FYI, Mr. Burford, if you think this is some foolhardy kids out busting bales for kicks and giggles, you're dumber than a bag of hammers. He actually guffawed at that, but I jumped back into it before he could yell at me. Answer me this. Have you put any up in any barns? He shook his head in the affirmative. Beautiful. Anywhere nearby? He pointed back toward the south. I'm assuming cut at the end of last week, bailed 3 days ago or so, and then immediately put up. He shook his head again, still unsure why anyone in my position would talk to him like he was the village idiot. A cloud came up the other night, and my hired hand and me got to the field and gathered up about 20. He stuffed his hands into his pockets, making him appear grumpier. Why do you want to know? I started my truck. I'm curious. I put it in gear. And by the by, I added, I'm not sure if the sheriff told you or not, but I spotted some coon hunters on your property. That's why I missed whoever it was busting your bales. I'm assuming you knew about the hunters. I knew full well he didn't, as farmers like Burford wouldn't let anyone on their property to fish, hunt, or go for a Sunday stroll. He grimaced. I smiled. He jerked a hand out of his pocket and raised a finger into the air. The Wilsons, he proclaimed. If I've told them once, I've told them a dozen times. I'm sure you have, I said, not needing the lecture. I reversed the truck out of there without so much as a rock being spun out of place. I found Burford's barn a couple of miles south of his house. The tin shone bright in the buttery sunshine. It reminded me of the barn we had back at my parents' farm. Growing up, I used to tie rope or old twine from the barn's rafters so I could swing like a swashbuckler in the movies my folks loved to watch. When I tied off around a rotted piece of timber, I swung, busted the beam, and tore a chunk out of my leg. Dad put a stop to my swashbuckling days. Killing the engine, I stepped out of my truck and across the barnyard. Burford had the doors slid shut, so I heaved on the one that would give and opened it up. The ripe, fresh alfalfa smell wafted through the air. Beams of light shot through tiny holes throughout the barn, giving it a strange glow. Dust particles floated gingerly around in space. Stacked up three high were the 4x4x8 footers that Burford preferred. I could tell, however, that these bales were from a previous cutting as the green had bleached. I moved further south to find the hay he referred to. These were pea green. They'd been baled up just a few days before. I would hate to tell him, but most of these had the twines cut as well. Whoever did it burrowed into the hay after that, scattering it hither and yon. Bored teens, or whoever Burford suspected, didn't work this hard at playing havoc. I climbed up on top of one of the bales. I stuck my arm down into the opening where the twines were cut. The hay felt warm to the touch. The stems stabbed into my forearm as I dug deeper into the crevice. The perpetrator knelt where I did with his arms up to the shoulder in the fresh alfalfa. I looked around the barn at the mounds of scattered hay. Hopping up onto the third layer, I found the same thing. Twine severed, the compressed hay spread open, and fistfuls dug out and flung all over the place. It didn't take a genius to figure this thing out, but it seemed so incredulous. I get being hard up for money and doing desperate, even stupid things, but my idea as to what had occurred here meant something devious, even nefarious, was at work. I got back down to terra firma and dialed my cell in the bright midday sunshine. Go away, Vince. You bother me, Nadalyn said after the second ring. How about an updated crime report in this here neck of the woods of Garvin County, I asked. And no do-si-doing routine either, Nat. Besides drinking at some abandoned oil rig by a bunch of teenagers and a bit of pot, what in the world is going on down here? She actually growled at me. And a good Baptist girl to boot. That isn't English, I said, or would you like me to play a guessing game? A long, drawn-out sigh, and then, they've got some production going on down there, she said as elusively as she could. Production? I asked. Is there some kind of sting plan for this production? At this point, I was fishing, but I could read the signs. Holding out on me meant that the sheriff needed the OSBI's assistance on something they couldn't contain on their own. She wouldn't budge off the teenage wannabe terrorist routine when I knew better, and she knew I knew better. Maybe you should just come on back home, she offered. We do have church tonight, you know. I slapped my forehead. What a dunce. "For crying out loud, Nat," I said, exasperated. "The last time I checked, meth was going for about 53 thou a pound, or am I off a few hundred bucks?" She nearly spit a filthy, which made me blush. "Now, Nat, come on, this is me you're talking to," I said, trying to calm her down. "And when was the last time you answered the altar call?"
"Vince, it might be a good plan at this point for you to get in your truck and drive back on up here. We can have an early supper. I'll make mashed potatoes and homemade bread."
"And then church," I added.
"Yes!"
I leaned against the hood of my truck, letting its warmth seep through my t-shirt. I pulled my sunglasses off the top of my head onto my face. I let the pause build up between us.
"Vince," she asked.
"You asked me to do this one, Nat," I said.
"And I'm regretting it," she shot back.
"How about a name then?"
She laughed.
"A name, Nat," I said. She gave in and told me. Methamphetamine is cataloged as a Schedule II drug by the Controlled Substance Act, which when boiled down simply means it's easy to abuse. And in the U.S., we've proven that time and again, especially here in Oklahoma. Overdose deaths are out of control, but not enough deterrent to make it go away. Not with the going price and the relative ease of manufacturing it. Cookers produce it using the shake-and-bake method, using chemicals, cold medicine, and an empty 2-liter bottle. The unexperienced risk explosions, which cause trouble as doctors in an ER know how to spot those types of burns, so many don't go get patched up but stay scarred for life. But making quick dough has always been appealing. Point of fact, in Tulsa last year, highway patrolmen found 1,200 pounds of liquid meth in the fuel tank of a semi-rig. That's a net worth of $4.4 million, as in dollars. The name Carlton Perry sparked my brushing up on what I knew about meth cooking in my home state. When Nat City's name, it clicked into place. I'd come across his name several times in news reports on drug busts, and I'd seen his face on TV. His residence? Outside Lindsay, near the Ouachita River. He lived in the trailer that his dad left him after he died. Law enforcement kept close tabs on him. Since he'd come back to town, as I discovered later, theft of anhydrous ammonia went up. It's another ingredient used to cook meth and can be ripped off from farmers who use it to prep their land for sowing wheat or rye. But the rub, as always, was that Perry couldn't get nailed on anything. He stayed close to his trailer and the river without venturing into town much. I drove back to Burford's place to track him down. I found him in his shop welding on a metal gate. Patiently, I stood there waiting for the cuss to finish up.
"What?"
he asked as he lifted the hood on his welding helmet. "What do you think of when I say Carlton Perry?" I asked. He spit a couple of filthies, answering my question. "Yeah, I thought you might say something like that. Know him?"
"When I see him, and then I go the other way. He just had to move here, didn't he?"
He pulled the helmet off and set it on his workbench.
"What's he got to do with my hay?"
I told him my theory. He choked in rage.
"If I even thought that something like that..."
He knocked his knuckles on his workbench for added emphasis. He didn't finish his sentence, but just let it hang there. "He doesn't hang around here, does he?" I asked, hoping for the answer that fit my guess on this thing. He shook his head in the negative.
"No way. Since he's moved back, the local yokels and the sheriff have been watching him like a hawk. If he burps, they know about it."
Well, that blew my theory out of the water. Burford shook a finger into the breeze.
"And that nephew of his. What is his name? Mike? Yep, that's the one. He's just as bad."
"Do tell."
"The first day I started baling up my hay, I got word from the sheriff that he'd been out this way. A deputy followed him until he got out of his truck and disappeared across my property down there on the South 80.
I nodded as if I knew what the South 80 was as I formulated a new suspicion. As goofy as this whole situation had been, it seemed plausible. "Move any of that hay you baled on the South 80?" I inquired. He smiled.
"As a matter of fact..."
Leaving Burford's house, I got on the phone to the sheriff's office but got the brush off quicker than you could spit. Whoever droned from the other end followed some sort of script asking every inane question you could possibly imagine. I hung up and dialed Natalie. It went directly to voicemail. Her chirpy, oaky twang gave instructions on what to do when it beeped.
But just as it got to that part of the message, I heard, "If this is Vince Gibson, remember that church starts at 7:30 tonight, and for goodness sake, wear some jeans that don't have a hole in them this time." Beep. That tore it. I refused to leave a message to her on principle. She announced to half the world about my cruddy pair of jeans that I just happened to wear one time to Wednesday night services. I bit down hard on a couple of foul words, asked for forgiveness, and whipped toward town to grab a greasy burger somewhere while I waited on someone with some kind of authority to call me back. Let's just say that the burger in question satisfied my culinary desires to the point where I posted about it online. I left a nice tip, said see you later to the cook, and got back into my truck. Still no one had buzzed me back. Curious, I headed back to Burford's place with directions on how to find his bobtailed truck that his wife loaded with a couple of bales of hay from the first field he worked. I kicked the truck into gear as I passed a couple of semi-rigs as I headed out of the city limits. If my deductions played out, I should find the key to this mess in one of those bales of hay. And I had a pretty good idea what it might be. The red dust whipped in the air behind my truck as I practically flew down a one-lane dirt road west of what Burford dubbed the South 80. I saw a tin barn off toward the north, just where he said it would be, and turned in. Pulled just inside, I saw a red GMC bobtail with two dark green bales of alfalfa on the bed of the truck. I could smell the aromatic odor from the hay drifting on the air. I killed the truck and checked my phone. Nada. I dialed Natalie again and got her voicemail. I pondered leaving a tacky message, but thought better of it. I rang up the sheriff's office again, got the same person on the other end, and interrupted before the spiel could be started. I gave my name, whereabouts, and what I was up to with orders that I would need the sheriff's attention very soon. Before any questions could be thrown at me, I hung up. I hopped onto the bed of the truck, which made my full tummy lurch a bit. I slid toward the butt end of the first bale, flicked open my lock blade, and slit the twine. I peeled the layers back off onto the ground at the rear of the truck. I dug all the way through without finding a thing. With some trepidation, I repeated the same actions on bale number two. A quarter of the way through, I found what I was looking for. Buried in the thick of the alfalfa rested a package about a foot square. It had been wrapped tight with gray duct tape, so tight, in fact, that the baling action hadn't split it open. Just what the Perry nephew hoped. The thought process went as such. Perry is driving through the country, sees a sheriff's deputy, panics, hops out of his truck on foot, and drops his package I now held in my hands onto one of the hay windrows. Not able to return before it was wrapped up, he had been prancing about the countryside, busting Burford's bales open to find his missing stash. I carefully slit the package open. I whistled when I saw inside it. Bobbling the package in my hands, I took a guess that it weighed a couple of pounds, making it worth a little less than $100,000. I couldn't believe that this brownish-colored material could be worth so much and do so much harm. Mercy. I mumbled as I contemplated that what I held in my hands could pay off all my debts and put a down payment on a nice house for myself. Ridiculous. Just as I put the package in my front seat and cranked my pickup to life, I saw in my rearview mirror a puff of dust coming up behind me. I whirled around to see a beat-up Chevy one-ton barreling straight towards the back of my truck. By the skin of my teeth, I rolled out with the package in tow before this Yahoo smashed into my vehicle. His front windshield blew out as the rear end of my truck squeezed in like an accordion. His horn honked for half a sec with steam spewing forth from underneath the hood of his one ton. I groaned as I looked over the damage to my ride. It was half the truck it was just 10 seconds before, and I mean that in the literal sense. Not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, the guy behind the wheel, and I guessed him to be Mike Perry, hadn't figured on the airbag pinning him in. I walked over to his door and leaned in through the open window. "You're about an idiot, aren't you?" I asked. He tried to punch me but failed to connect. The wreck disoriented him too much for him to be coherent. "Hold on, Slick," I said as I popped the airbag with my knife. The gas blew into his face, which nearly made me laugh. "I love thugs like you, you know that?" He managed a couple of filthies as I opened the door for him. He stepped out and fell flat on his face. 20 minutes later, the sheriff arrived.
Needless to say, but I should do it anyway as an act of penance to my accountability partner, I missed church services that night and the big home-cooked meal. The sheriff, bent out of shape at my initiative, made it plain that he would take the credit for the bust of Mike Perry. I let him know in no uncertain terms that sounded just Jim Dandy to me, but I was still getting paid. At this point, I really didn't know who would write the check, nor did I care, just as long as I got paid. In a huff, he took off to arrest Carlton Perry just to satisfy his already bruised ego. When he arrived, Carlton, with his meaty paws, swatted at his idiotic nephew several times. The said nephew pleaded, "It was an accident." To that, I needed some kind of explanation, but wanting to get out of there pronto, I didn't bother asking. Madeline didn't come to pick me up until the next morning. I supposed it was out of some kind of Christian charity, but I didn't dare ask. The hotel was abysmal. "You missed a good lesson at church last night," she said over a cup of coffee at a place called Wanda's. "It was on Psalms chapter 1, and I quote, 'Blessed is the man who does not sit in the counsel of the ungodly.'" "You are a laugh riot," I moaned without any mirth. "Would you give me a menu so I can order something? I haven't eaten since. I have no idea when." She passed it over with a begrudging look plastered on her face. "The sheriff said it was high-grade meth, by the by," she said. "I know that, Nat. Perry and his clan were under surveillance for quite some time. I couldn't talk to you about it," she added. "I know that too, Nat." "They had an old RV without any wheels down in a valley out behind Perry's place," she explained. "They were producing the meth there, worth over $100,000. "That's right, I was told several times." The sheriff made it very clear he knew about the package's whereabouts the entire time. He also let me know that the nephew saw me snooping around Burford's barn and decided to follow me around, which was too bad for your pickup. I smiled at her sweetly. "I hope you'll make sure I get to where I need to go." She cracked nary a grin. "I think those boots of yours were made for walking." I opened my mouth to say something pithy and smart, but I thought better of it. Better to quit while I was ahead, even if it wasn't by much. Instead, I said, "I'll have an invoice for somebody so I can get paid. With my truck totaled, I'll need to make a down payment on something that goes vroom." She tossed back more of her coffee. "About that, I got a call from the Ag Rangers in the Department of Ag. They need some help tracking down a missing prize bull," she said. "Blow it out your ear, honey." "Vince, you can count it as doing your..." I held up a hand. "Do not say it, Nat." "I will. And stop calling me Nat."
"I love you too," I said. She choked on the last of her coffee and for once was speechless.
Thank you, Brett Jones, for this reading of Not My First Rodeo from the March-April 2022 issue of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. Check out our blog where Brett Jones has written a post expanding on agricultural crime. You can find that at traceevidence.net. That's trace-evidence.net. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is published 6 times a year by Dell Magazines and Penny Publications. You can find us at your local newsstands. Electronic editions are available from all major e-tailers. A special thanks to our managing editor, Jackie Sherbo, and our editorial assistant, Kevin Wheeler, for their work to produce this podcast series. I'm Linda Landrigan. Thanks for listening.